Hello and welcome into another episode of Podcast 63, Season 3, Episode 10. Buck and Lou are here again. This week we had a surprise game. We had an unfortunate cancellation and a game against North Texas that got put together in the span of just probably 48 hours or so. On top of that, we're going to talk some about the Missouri Valley Conference. One of our rivals, Drake, is off to a blistering start at 13-0, and we are going to be playing them this weekend. So we'll be sure to talk about that. But before that, we're going to talk about our rankings across the country, just kind of how we stand against other teams. We're going to be talking about our favorite two ranking systems, KenPom and Haslametrics, and then a little other tidbits along the way. So make sure to stay tuned, and don't forget, go Blurs.
He jumps, he passes out to Hunter, Hunter shoots, off the rim, Rouse gets it, scores, it's over, we won the ball game, Viola won the ball game, oh, we won, 60-58.
And welcome back. All right, Lou, so we had a surprise game this week, so yeah. That's good. We are playing Drake this upcoming week, which is going to be really good. Mm-hmm. But first, let's just talk about the rankings a little bit, because I feel like we kind of need a refresher on like where we stand nationally. I know this year has been pretty crazy, just kind of in general, but it is kind of good to compare our squad to some of the other teams around the nation. Actually, so as you know, I love KenPom and Haslametrics. They're my two favorite rating systems. And I've never seen our ratings be this close on both of them. Like in years past, it's like, you know, plus or minus 10, like one will have us at 60, the other at 70, or, you know, so on and so forth. But these two have us actually almost identical. So Haslametrics has us as the 46th best team, and KenPom has us as the 47th best team. Some of the other teams kind of around us in those rating systems, Haslametrics has teams like Indiana, Oklahoma, and Purdue just above us, and then teams like Stanford, Florida State, Oklahoma State just under us. KenPom, kind of similar. They have Oklahoma just above us. Same with like Virginia Tech and Stanford. And then below us, they have teams like Penn State, Kentucky, and Michigan State, which is kind of funny. But I don't know. What do you think about the ratings? Like, I know it's kind of a surprise to see us up that high, but I think when you kind of total our close games, or especially the game against Richmond, and then, you know, a couple solid wins like UIC and North Texas this week, what do you kind of think? Do you think we're getting like recognition nationally, or where do you think we stand nationally?
Nationally, I think everyone's just going to, again, it's just so tough. We always go back to, oh, that's the Final Four team from a few years ago. I think this weekend will really solidify nationally, especially since Drake has received, I think, like 17 votes in the top 25. But overall, though, having KenPom and Haslametrics really, really notice us and put us on a scale of that like national level, I think is really big. I do think mid-major level, we're there. We're at least in top 10. We're consistent. We go to NITs. We win conference championships. So I think we're there. And I think weekend, like against Drake coming up, we'll really understand if we can jump to that scale. Drake being 12-0 is an amazing feat to have. I think a win against Wisconsin, Richmond would have solidified national attention, especially with Richmond beating Kentucky and stuff like that, and Wisconsin being top 10. So We're almost there. I think we have the team to do it. I definitely think this team is so strong and depth-wise and just skill-wise that we can get there. I don't think right now with just like the level, and I think it's maybe just the slowness of the season, not playing a full non-conference. We're just not quite there yet, but there's just positives all the way. Arrows going up. So I don't see us going down in any way. I see it only going up from here. And then again, I think this is one of the great things I have is Drake is going to be a challenge this weekend. You can't deny that. And I think two wins or any type of win, I think these games are going to be really important to answer that question moving forward in the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good that we're here. And I think two wins against Drake or even like one really good one and another close game could move us up a little bit. It's kind of, I think we're in a good position. Just generally speaking, especially with games coming against Drake this weekend, because even if we split them and they're close games, I think we'll kind of still be in the same level. I think a lot of teams, right, or a lot of people right now are looking at Drake and being like, oh my gosh, like they're, you know, 13-0. I don't even think any other team has like 12 wins. I think there's one other team that might be 11-0, but no one even has 12 wins. So they're definitely getting a lot of national attention. As you mentioned earlier, Lou, like Dickie V is talking about them. And that's super cool. I'm super happy that Drake is getting national attention, and they should. I mean, yeah, their 13 games are not against the best competition, but it's still 13 wins. And for us to take them on this weekend, it gives us a little, it gives us the ability to really like take another step forward, depending on how the results go. But yeah, so just some other, like I was looking, on The Athletic, their mid-major roundup, they have like a weekly, it's called This Week in Mid-Major. They have us at number 8 as far as like mid-major teams go. They don't include Gonzaga, but they include like the A-10. So St. Louis is number 1, San Diego State, St. Bonaventure, Richmond, number 4, Boise State, BYU, Winthrop, and then us. And then let's see, it only goes to 10, so doesn't have Drake included here. Western Kentucky and Belmont round out the top 10. It actually says they're in, they call it the waiting room, and there's only 2 teams on there. So they're either 11th or 12th on their list. But yeah, it's just, it's cool that I think we're holding steady. I think we've kind of held our own in some of the more competitive games, even though we didn't beat either Richmond or Wisconsin, to beat North Texas, to beat UIC. Those kind of games, I think, matter a lot. So hopefully we can keep it up. Lou, why don't you talk a little bit about the next thing, which is the tournament update being in Indianapolis, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no. So for those of you who don't know, again, it's kind of been rumored, it came down to, especially with the NBA, how they handled it with the playoffs, was that they bubbled it. And it was kind of really the big thought that instead of having a nationwide NCAA tournament, that we were going to come down to a point where the NCAA would just have it in maybe one location, one state. And of course it came down to that it's going to be all take place. NCAA tournament sites are all going to take place in Indiana. Again, Indianapolis, the city of Indianapolis, the head of the NCAA. So in total, they're going to use 6 different arena stadiums. And just to go quickly through them, it's going to be Ball State's stadium, Lucas Oil, which is a Horizon League, but also football, Hinkle Fieldhouse, which is Butler's, IUPUI's arena, Indiana University down in Bloomington, and then Purdue, their arena up in West Lafayette. So really nice to see that they're getting ahead of it. I think especially it's kind of crazy, as we all know. It's January, the new year, so March Madness is coming up soon, if you think about it. So they are kind of getting ahead of it, kind of getting really, I think, the everything put in order. As you know, we did play down in Indianapolis when we went to go play Richmond. So I think there's already been that system with so many other college teams playing down there. I think it's great. I think it's great to see that we're going to have a kind of a bubble and really get this under control, also for the safety of teams, but also just for the enjoyment of the game. As you know, we had our games canceled this past week due to COVID, so it's still an ongoing thing. So it's really, really tough to understand what's going to happen come March. So getting prepared for that now, I think, is great. And again, I believe we saw it through March Madness, Andy Katz's Twitter account, or the official March Madness, but you can definitely see that through the NCAA. But Buck, are you excited, or are you happy to see it? Is it kind of crazy to think it's January already, or what's on your mind about it?
Yeah, I remember I saw a tweet. I'm trying to think who it was. It might have been Andy Katz, but it might have been a different national reporter, college basketball reporter. It was something like basketball was conceived in Champaign but born in Indiana, which is like, I was like, Champaign is where it was perceived or thought to have started, with a basket and a ball. But I think that's kind of true. It's cool to be in Indiana. I know, like, if you ask Tate Hall, he'll tell you, like, basketball in Indiana is just different. Like, it's just more important. It's life. It's, you know, everyone plays basketball. You don't really have a choice. But just kind of from a non-hypothetical opinion, I think it's cool. I think they needed to do something in one centralized location, because traveling across the country multiple times in a week is just not, it's not possible. Like in this day and age in 2021, it's just not going to be possible with COVID still happening. That being said, like, I think I like how the different teams that got picked or the stadiums that got picked, it's like a wide array. You know, you got everything from your one, you know, top 50 perennial Division I basketball teams, but then you have mid-majors like Ball State and IUPUI and the Horizon League Stadium too. And I don't want to leave out Butler. Butler is up there as well with Indiana and Purdue. So I think that's cool. And I like personally like that it's kind of close to where I am in Chicago. Not that I'm going to be able to go, but I think it's cool that it's in the Midwest. And I know that might light a little bit of a fire under Tate Hall to pick it up a little bit and take us to the NCAA tournament again. I'm trying to think who else is from Indiana. I know Paxson spent a lot of time there, but he's not from there.
Yeah, Paxson went to school there, and so did Frank because they went to LaLu. But there is someone else. Do you want me to give you a hint? He happens to sit on the bench sometimes, but we love seeing him get out there on the court.
Is it Will Alcock or Jake Collins?
I believe I've seen somewhere. I think Will is from Indianapolis or just outside Indianapolis. But yeah, Will Alcock and our good boy Tate are both from Indiana boys. And I don't believe anyone else. I'll pull up the roster. But yes. I think it's cool to get Tate going at that, if that's his mentality. But again, yeah, I love it's so close, but yet so far for us. That's why I love if we went down to play IUPUI, any school kind of Indianapolis or Butler even or Purdue, because I think that's somewhere we can reach and get down there. So being close enough is kind of cool. And then Demezi, he's from South Bend, so maybe again, we don't know if he'll play that much. We'll see. Again, we can talk about that in the games so far. But yeah, I think it's really cool being in Indiana. Again, like you said, it's kind of the birthplace of basketball, that whole Hoosier culture. So I think it's just great that they kind of have a game plan going forward, and hopefully we can see our Ramblers on the court down in Indianapolis sometime soon.
Yeah, speaking of walk-ons, this is just kind of random, but one of my favorite moments from the Loyola North Texas game, Nick DeNardi was on the call on ESPN Plus. He was doing color
commentary.
Game. Yeah. Yeah. And I forget how it started, but the play-by-play was asking Nick whether Nick taught Cam like all his post moves and stuff, and you know, Nick kind of laughed and he's like, you know, Cam taught us a lot too, and you know, actually now thinking about it, me and my counterpart Carson Shanks did teach him a lot, or something like, kind of like a joke, you know, but true, I'm sure. And then I'm sure someone either tweeted at Carson, or Carson might have just been watching. And he tweeted at Nick and said something like, oh, I'd love to get a shout out from, you know, from my boy Nick, you know, my team. I think he's coaching a Division II team or maybe Division III.
Yeah, in like North Dakota. Yeah, I believe that's what it is. Yeah.
And they actually just started. They just started their season. They were able to get it underway, and they got a victory. And so Carson was saying, hopefully Loyola can pull out the victory against North Texas. So just kind of funny. We're talking about walk-ons, you know, love to give the walk-ons a love. But we definitely have I feel like we're really lucky to have like the guys that we do, like the walk-ons, specifically, you know, Nick. And was Carson a scholarship player? Why am I drawing a blank on that? Do you remember?
Yeah. So Carson was a scholarship player. He came from North Dakota. And it was interesting. He was a scholarship player, being 7 feet tall and everything. So it was interesting that we kind of were like, whoa, we have a 7-footer, but you rarely saw Carson Shanks start, but he had the amazing, the chance to send us all, was it free pizza with a three? And of course he chucked the three up. So I will always be happy with that man chucking a three for the fans. He was a man of the people. So yes,
he was. And yeah, congrats to Carson on his first victory. But yeah, that was one of my favorite moments from the game, but that's just kind of a tangent. But yeah, all in all, like I'm glad that they have a plan. I think that is great. I think we've seen, maybe this is just my personal opinion, But sports leagues, other than the NBA and NHL, kind of playing it by ear. And, like, yeah, of course they have, like, policies in place and, like, you know, they're trying their best. But, like, I think we got spoiled as sports fans seeing the NBA do the bubble and do it successfully and be like, oh, my gosh, well, why doesn't, you know, every league just do this? And so I bet you the NCAA is trying to take a lot of notes from NBA. They obviously they can't do a bubble because there's just – way too many people, you know, 68 teams, all the players, all the coaches, all the staff, all the, you know, doctors and, you know, trainers and stuff like that. So just too many people. But if they can even, you know, take 50% or like 75% of what the NBA did, I think they're going to have a really successful tournament. And we're going to get just a ton of basketball. And that's always, you know, my goal is to watch a ton of college basketball. Before we get into the game recap this week, anything, as I'm just kind of throwing you for a loop here, but anything around college basketball that you were tuned into this week or any, I don't know, any fun plays or anything like that you saw this week you want to talk about?
Yeah, no, I think speaking of rankings, I believe it was KenPom came out with National Player of the Year rankings that I saw this week, and our we had a few names that I think the people of Chicago recognized at the top of the list, but there was a name I believe in the top 10 or top 5 that were on his list, and it was our Cameron Krutwig. And it was kind of crazy to see. I believe AO down at Illinois was on there. As number one, and maybe Luke Garza was two, but Cameron Krutwig, I think, was three or four. I'll try to find it if we talk later about it. But it was really interesting just to see even that consideration. I'll be honest, I'd never thought of him, especially just with the talent out there, as being solo, like, player of the year. I can see him, of course, being conference player of the year, which, again, in right, winning conference player of the year should put you up for national player of the year. So it was just really interesting to, like, oh, that would be I would love to see Cam Krutwig against Luke Garza. Like, that's what got me thinking about the whole situation. So it was a fun thing to little see. Again, it's nothing official. No, it's not the full vote of what the National Player of the Year are. But again, we've seen guys win Conference Player of the Year and get national recognition elsewhere. So I think it'd be really cool just to continue doing that moving forward and just continue seeing Cam kind of just ball out and then the Ramblers winning a few games.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked as well. I mean, obviously Cam's, you know, the best player of all time, but still, like, for him to get the national recognition of that. And it's like a formula, so, I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's not biased in any way.
No, it's done right. Yeah, I agree. I like that, yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with, like, the best performer on your team over all the games. So, like, consistently Cam has been the best performer of that game, even if we lose, like, even if we're playing Richmond or Wisconsin, Cam was still, like, putting up numbers or however, you know, I'm sure clutch time is probably more important, stuff like that. So it makes a lot of sense. Although this is a segue. So are you ready to go into the North Texas game?
Let's go.
Okay. So the segue here is, although Cam was definitely not the top performer in our most recent game, that has to go to none other than Ahir Ugwuok. I mean, what better place to start? Just right off the top, 26 points, new career high, 7 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, which were very key and clutch in certain times, 2 assists, 1 beautiful one to Tom Welch, and a steal, and only 1 turnover. Also, 8 for 11 from the free throw line, which we love to see.
Love to see.
31 minutes, and just, like, 2 for 3 from 3. It's just, like...
Well, then you're forgetting one other stat. I don't know if you know. There's one massive dunk that you just couldn't forget about.
Of course. I don't know how SportsCenter didn't have a top 10.
Oh, don't even get us started with that.
Don't. But, yeah, it's just, like, such a fun game for him. I mean, like, overall, the game, I think, was a little frustrating for me. I wouldn't say, like, obviously the result is perfectly fine. That's kind of what I expected, honestly. 8 to 10 points was what I was hoping for. So for that to happen is great. But other than Ahir and Cam, and I would say from an offensive standpoint, those two and then Cooper's threes, a little just kind of frustrating. Like, seeing Tate go over 7 from 3, Braden didn't score. Guys like, you know, Marquise only had 2 points, and then Lucas only had 4. But defensively, I mean, Lucas and Marquise were just excellent, and so were a lot of the other guys here too. But those guys in particular. So I'm gonna stop talking. Lou, talk to me about the game. What'd you like?
Yeah, no, of course. Your point about frustration, I was in the same boat. You were like, come on, guys, this is such a kind of nearly, I wouldn't say horrible game, but you're like, this is the team that we're rooting for, like 22-19. But it was just defensive battle in the beginning. I can't deny that. I think early on, North Texas kind of had a really great game plan. They weren't stealing the ball off us. They weren't stripping it. But I just think it was defensive battle after defensive battle. But then you can't deny we held in the first half, we held their top scorer, I think, what, co-conference player of the year or conference player of the year, to 1 of 7 from the field. They were 11% from 3. So I think we, in response to not having kind of that go-getter, really strong, fast-paced offense in the beginning, we said, hey, we're not having it right now on offense, but let's make sure we don't give it up on defense. So that's something that I think we haven't seen as much really all over the court, all 5 guys on the court. You see definitely there are guys who are naturally strong defenders and everything, but I think overall the first half, even though we didn't have it offensively, I think everyone played a really great defensive game. And that's something that even, I guess you could say in the St. Francis game, I got frustrated in the first half. It just seemed like they were lacking defense, but I think this game really showed you the defense. And then, of course, in the second half, we just decided to score, and then again, North Texas never really left. And I think it was just a close game. North Texas is a great team. They were co-conference, or they won the conference championship. So I was really excited about that. But here, Uruguay, I think, was just, no matter how this game was going to end, especially with a W, here, Uruguay, just a shining star right now with this game. And I really think I hope it boosts his confidence, because I think he easily deserves this. So far, his gameplay has been kind of unselfish. Except for the free throws, I think he could have done a little bit more, but he has really been the slasher. He's been the guy. He's had nice passes. He's been close, so I think he's really helped, and having him go off in a game like this was just really something special, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like so much talk about him specifically. One of the things I found interesting, after the game, they interviewed North Texas's coach, which I'm not going to bother to remember his name, but they asked him, like, what was your game plan? Like, how'd you do? Whatever. And he said, he's like, we were going to give Uguac those shots. Like, that was our game plan. It was like, we don't want the rest of the guys to hurt us. So, you know, we give him threes. We're letting him drive, like that sort of thing. And for him, like, he's been getting this sort of defensive treatment since, you know, midway through his first season. You know, people, like, at first, everyone guarded him out far because, you know, they thought he could shoot and, you know, he's probably hitting them in warmups. And then as kind of as the book got drawn up on him, everyone was like, well, he can't shoot. So just play off him. You know, he's not going to try to shoot. There's no reason. And now he's starting to make them. Before he missed one in this game, he had made, I think, 4 or 5 in a row and like 6 out of his last 7 now or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just got to do wonders for him personally for his confidence. Like you said, like from an athlete standpoint, like you just going out and proving you can do it is half the battle. Honestly, like he knows he can do it now. So like, he's going to try and he'll get more respect on defense. And that's just going to open up the offense so much more for everyone else. Cam specifically, like, of course, the 3-point shooters, but if you think about it, like if he can make even 30% of his threes, right? Like he's gonna attract a defender to come out, and now they can't double team Cam as easily in the post. So it's just super cool. I'm so happy for him. He's been such a warrior for 2.5 years, frustrating at times for sure. But always plays great defense, has put up big rebound numbers in important games in the past. And now, like, he's probably not going to score 26 points again. If he does, that's outstanding. But even for him to constantly contribute 8 or 10 and hit a 3, and, you know, 1-3 every other game or something, and just be so, so big for this team and this offense.
Beautifully said. I think it's something that nearly, I think it just here finally opened up, not just his shot, but just his game in this game, because he's developing this interesting just incline of just his skill level and his performance on the court. In beginning of this season, it was like 0 for 1, 0 for 2, 0 for 1, didn't shoot a 3. Then the last four games before this game is 1-for-1, 1-for-1, 1-for-1 from three. And you're like, oh, interesting. And he went 3-for-4, 4-for-4, 5-for-6. So he was really being smart. And then this game was just going off. I just have to say it because I said to someone when I was watching, I'm going to say this on this episode, but there was just a wide open possession, and he think he missed a wide open layup.
He did.
And it was just so tough because the best part was, and it helps explain how Cam can help, is I believe they double teamed Cam or double teamed Tom. I forget who was the other power forward down there, but then they just dish it off to Ahir. It might have been even Marquise Kennedy because he's so great at getting to the rim. So they doubled, and Ahir was just wide open. Mm-hmm. And so when I see that, you're like, oh my gosh, the play worked. It worked. It just they didn't execute the final thing, which is just gently put it in the hoop. So it was a little frustrating, but I kind of joked because Ahir already had, I think, was growing off in a great game. I was just worried because, again, the game seemed really close. But that point I bring up is because it matches what I think your sentiment a lot with, is that being Ahir, kind of teams are not sure now, maybe after this game, how to defend him. Like Drake, we don't know. Will they put Hemphill on him? Because it's like, whoa, will they play him up? Well, maybe there's kind of a mismatch because he is kind of athletic. If he can shoot a decent three. But now it maybe gives Cam breathers because he'll just have one-on-one and Cam can really move quicker, be smarter down low. And Ahir definitely can feed the ball. We saw the assist he made, was it to Tom Welch? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think this system could work. I really do think this game now, if we're Bradley, or not even Bradley because we're supposed to, but Drake, and we can get in this later, it's really going to mess up how you defend us, especially with our starters. Because you don't want to give up the three. That's where you're on everyone for the three, from Tate to Braden, even a Lucas. But then when you try to double team Cam, it's like, well, you got to watch out where Ahir is. So it really excites me for a kind of a collective all five. And then, as I said, we're going to talk about depth. This just really solidifies how deep our scoring can go. And I think given the right day, even Ahir doesn't have a good game, Cam can come in. And that's the thing. It matters where we got to find the right role to really have the right tempo with a certain player. And I think that alley-oop from Marquise Kennedy to Ahir just looked smooth and looked nice. I love the defense turned into offense. So it was just a really great game to see. Tough game. No matter what, it was a tough game. Great competitor, and I think a great schedule win for us. I love seeing North Texas on there because it's like, didn't see it coming out of anywhere, and then it just happened, and I think it was great.
Speaking of Marquise Kennedy, talk about his defense a little bit, like just his overall game. He only had 2 points, but he had 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals.
Yep.
I mean, he just was playing great defense. Yeah, he was. I'm pretty sure you're right about that one. I hear open layup. I think he's robbed of another assist. But yeah, he played extremely good defense. Also played 25 minutes, which is more than Tate played in this game, and almost as much as Braden and Lucas played. So I'm really happy to see him get those minutes. Additionally, like Lucas's defense was outstanding. He again, it's kind of similar line. 4 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals. One of the things I noticed, we were talking about how Javion Hamlet, their leading scorer and conference player of the year last year, he was really struggling in the first half, and that's when Lucas was playing defense. Lucas and Ahir were kind of switching off on him, and Braden wasn't playing that much when Hamlet was really struggling. And then he got one layup bucket at the end of the first half. That was against Braden Norris. And then in the second half, he really got going when Braden Norris was playing defense on him. And I'm pretty sure Coach saw that because for the last like 7 minutes, I want to say, or 8 minutes, if Lucas Williamson was on the floor, he was guarding Hamlet. And I like, there's no way that's an accident. And that actually gets me personally like super pumped that Coach knows that Lucas is his best defender. Or Lucas is like, give me him. Like, I want to play defense on him because I think I can take him or I can guard him. And he didn't. He didn't, and he did great. I think the only basket Hamlet scored was like right at the end of the game or like 30 seconds to go when the game was kind of out of reach. But just excellent, excellent defense from Lucas. I'm really glad to see that Coach knew how to work the lineups. This is one game. Like, I'm often picking on him for his lineups and minutes distribution, but I think this game was perfect. he understood that Tate was struggling, and you know, but he encouraged him to shoot when he was on the floor because he can make it. But he could tell that both, I think, Tate and Braden were kind of a step behind on defense, and Marquise came in and filled in on defense, and Cooper came in and he made two threes, and that was it's kind of what we're used to seeing Tate make. So I was really happy with the lineups this game. I'm actually really surprised to see Tate only played 20 minutes. I would have thought that he played like Braden Norris's minutes at 27 and Braden played 20, but that wasn't the case. So just defensively, excellent. We created 20 turnovers, which is really, really great. And their best, one of their best players fouled out. We got him into foul trouble and something Bell. He followed out. So just really good game plan, especially when the shots aren't falling. We had a really atypical game for us, like shooting wise, just 42% from the field. But our free throws were 76%. So like that's pretty darn good. It was cool to see them win in a different way. I think that's my overall takeaway from this game.
Yeah, no. I think just the free throws, we have to comment. Three-point wasn't really there, like you said, Tate, but free throws are going up. If you look at our last few games, they're going up. I would love to see a team overall in that 80-85 range. I think that I don't know what the national average of free throws is, but I just think from where this team has come from, a nice 80-85 range would be fine with free throws. So I think the one thing I just want to add, because you talked about lineups, and I was really intrigued by this, was that Tom Welch didn't really play. He only played 7 minutes. And I don't think that's anything against him. I just think Porter kept going with the hot hand, and that was a here. And it just makes a lot of sense to keep going with here because they didn't really know, like you said, even the postgame, they didn't know how to defend because they weren't planned to defend. I don't know if Porter, again, I don't want to give too much credit, but also don't want to give not enough credit. We don't know if that's what Porter knew. Oh, they don't know how to guard a here, but it just seemed like they didn't. From a fan watching, they weren't really going out to the three. And again, 2 for 3 is great for him. And then he was just so athletic down low and grabbing the rebounds. So it was interesting to see, just looking at the box score, and you didn't think about this on the game. It's not like, oh, wow, I don't see Tom out there. But just looking at it, you're like, oh, Tom is only 7 minutes. But it just makes sense because he had such a great game. He had all the time on the court. So it was great to see, though, lineups, though, where here was kind of the leader on the court. You had, I think, a lineup where it was a here. Marquise, Tom, and maybe Keith. I don't think they usually put Marquise and Keith out there too much, but it was just interesting seeing it here be the vocal point. And then, of course, him and Marquise bouncing off each other for the alley-oop, just perfect communication seemed, even with not even Cam. And then again, Cam, though, 12 points. He put up the points, put up 6 rebounds. No assist. I thought that was a weird stat. I'm not saying it's a bad stat. Weird stat. Just because it's weird. The man always gets assists, but I think he was 6'11", decent game for him. Again, we hold him. So, again, it's just Tate didn't have a good game. I think that's just the downside, but here had a great game. And I'm going to say it again. We can start a counter, but it just talked about the depth here. It's what we have. It's when someone isn't having their hot game, you next man up, and it was a here. And I think it was just great to see that because I think it's going to open up the playbook and scare teams moving forward, and especially hopefully it starts scaring Drake come this week.
Yeah, I think that that kind of puts a wrap on it. I mean, Cooper played a lot, which is cool. I thought he was actually moving really well on defense, hustling. You know, he's never going to be that top defender, but he did pretty well and spaced the floor and had some nice passes here and there. Just like, I think what we're hoping from Cooper is that he's not like a defensive liability because he is such an offensive weapon, and he looked pretty good on defense. Kind of surprised Keith didn't get out there more, but I guess now that I'm looking at it, Clemens had 3 turnovers in 10 minutes. So yeah, I guess that's probably the reason there. I mean, it's just crazy that we got 9 points total. I guess throw Marquise in there, 11 points total from Tate Hall, Braden Norris, Lucas Williamson, and Marquise, and we still won. Like it,
I wouldn't thought that. Braden only, I think the craziest, like, if we're really going crazy, when Cam with 0 assists, Braden only put up 1 shot.
Yeah.
And though I think that's just how naturally sometimes it might not be the three. And let's be honest, the three wasn't there. We only made 4 threes. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the three last game, but we still shot him because I understand that. I feel like every commentator, no matter who it is mentioning the game plan, that Porter says he wants to shoot more threes, which we've said a lot on this. You live and die by the three. And it is a luxury that we have Cam, who's not the three-point specialist, because he's just an all-around beast down low. And then here going off, adding some three, but getting to the foul line, scoring 8 of his points straight from the free throw line. So I think it's something special that even though the three-point wasn't there, and it's not going to be there every game, I think, personally. I think there are some games we're going to struggle. But seeing an offense being able to open up to other kind of plays and having Ahir play 31 and Cam play 33, the most out of anyone on the team, and that's how we produce our offense, with both of them combining for 38 points out of our 57. So I think that's just something you might see in a game moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Overall, great game, great win. Like we've said, both, I think, a little frustrating at times. But the most important part is we got the W, and we beat a pretty darn good team in North Texas. Like, I'll be following them throughout the season, see how they do, and a really, really challenging Conference USA this year. But overall, pretty good. So then moving in kind of the last thing we got today, we don't have a whole ton to talk about, but I want to take some time, kind of update you on like what the conference is doing as a whole. Specifically talking about Drake, because A, that's our opponent next week, but B, they are 13-0. So the first thing, let's just kind of talk about like the Valley as a whole. So there are two teams that have played in games and are undefeated, and that's us and Drake. Drake is 4-0 in conference. They just beat Southern Illinois twice. And then the week before, they beat Indiana State twice. We're 2-0 in conference. We, you know, obviously beat Illinois State. Next teams here, Missouri State and Evansville, are both 3-1. Missouri State is just coming off a weekend sweep of Indiana State, I want to say.
Weekend sweep, yep.
And then Evansville, similarly, a weekend sweep of Northern Iowa, which is probably the craziest thing that's happened so far in conference play.
Absolutely.
Following both Southern Illinois and Northern Iowa are 1-3. Their only wins coming, Southern beat Evansville and Northern Iowa beat Missouri State 2 weekends ago. Both Bradley and Valpo, unfortunately, both have not played games yet in conference. And then Illinois State's 0-2. They've only played us, and Indiana State is 0-4. Lou, do we want to just talk about Drake, or what's something else that maybe surprised you so far?
No, I think Drake is, of course, the biggest topic. So I'll do a quick like fire round. Indiana State, I think the most shocking is just how I expected them to be a little bit higher and a little bit tougher, coming out. Illinois State, no shocker there. Again, Indiana State played Drake and Missouri State. So Missouri State, again, we think they can be a team, especially with Cage Prim. So we'll see how they go. SIU, really tough, especially a team that beat Butler. Didn't think you'd see them kind of falter against an Evansville and then kind of falter even more. So I think overall those are a biggest shocker. Though they lost to Drake, which is just the way I thought they might have at least get one game, but they lost by 31 to Drake in their last game. So, and then nearly 20 the other game. So I think Drake blowing them out will be really interesting when we play Drake come this weekend. So Evansville, what a shocker. I don't think anyone really would have thought, if you told us a year ago, 2 weeks ago, a day before the games, that they would have swept Northern Iowa. Even without AJ Green, I just think there really wasn't that big of a comparison with competition. I thought Northern Iowa had some guys that could easily put up good games against Evansville. Evansville clicked, and congrats to them. You got to give them like that team that had a really, really tough last year, losing a coach, losing all the games, and now they're 3-1 in conference and 5-5 overall. And let's be honest, 5-5 in a season like this isn't too bad. And if they keep producing at a conference level, I think it'd be interesting. So far we have to see a little Bradley Pay conference, of course. I think they're probably the most kind of asterisks. Bradley can do it. And then we lead right into Drake, which I think we have a lot to talk about to end this up, to prep for Sunday.
Yeah, I think the only thing I wanted to add there was about Evansville, and just like it's super shocking. Like I know Evan Kuhlman, and that's like it. Like I honestly can't tell you another player on their team, and good for them. I mean, it's because it's not the level. I don't want to say it's not the level of talent, But, you know, they're getting talent out of guys who weren't getting recognition elsewhere. Like, you know, they weren't getting these guys, like, they're not beating out teams for recruits. Like, some, you know, some of our transfers had offers from, you know, looks from, like, Notre Dame or, I don't know, a couple other high major schools, Richmond, for example, or these guys are, you know, the coach is making do with what he has. And I'm actually really excited to play them. I think like if they were doing poorly, it would be much easier for the guy, for Loyola, to just kind of like, oh, like walk in there, you know, we got this. And then all of a sudden they're down 10 at halftime and it's like, oh crap, like what do we do? So yeah, Evansville, super big surprise so far. Northern Iowa, the only thing to say is AJ Green is probably even better than we think he is, because Austin Fife is not doing that hot there right now. So, yeah, I mean, I think so far a couple surprises, but then you got us at the top along with Drake, 4-0. I think at the beginning of the season, we both just really didn't know what to expect from them. They were getting a couple guys, at least one guy back from, like, injury slash, like, suspension or away from the team, and a couple new transfers that we hadn't heard of, and they've really put it together. It looks like they have a really deep team. They are 13-0, like we've said. Roman Penn is there, and he's a great point guard, a great distributor, can also score the ball. But they have 10 guys over averaging over 10 minutes a game, or just about, I think, 9 guys averaging 10 minutes a game or more. 3 guys scoring over 11 points a game. So they're just, I think they're just a really deep team. I would say the one that, a name that we should all learn is Shanquan Hemphill, also known as Tank Hemphill, I'm told.
Yeah, which Tank. It's one of my favorites.
It's one of the best. It's like King Krut number one and Tank number two. Like those, I mean, that's just an incredible nickname. I want to know how he got it. Maybe it's from his thunderous dunks that I've seen, because he kind of, from what I can tell, has a very similar build to Ahir, actually. He's 6'6 and 195. Where did he come from?
I'm trying. Came from Green Bay.
Really?
Yeah, he transferred to Drake after 2 seasons. So an interesting school to really come from. It's not like he came from a JUCO or anything, but really I think, and let's be honest, I think this is why, and I was going to say, it's like Drake lost probably now a top 10 center in the country, Liam Robbins. Liam Robbins, who beat down on us last year, at least one game that I just can't forget, just the way he played against Cam and the way our power forwards, and now he's playing for Minnesota in the Big Ten and on a national stage. And so they kind of needed someone to step up. And I wouldn't say Tank is a big body with 6'6", but he's just that presence on the court. It's just really making a difference. So I think this losing Liam Robbins opened up his playing ability, and it's really showing off. Like, you cannot really deny his playing ability, but also losing Liam Robbins opens up that whole 9 people in 10-plus minutes. They really are putting out there. They're really mixing it up with people. So I think it's just exciting type of basketball that Drake's 12-0. Like you said, one of the rare teams that make it to 12 games. They found a way to play games, and they're playing pretty well. So it's kind of scary, but it's exciting to see, because I think we're ready to handle some tough competition like that.
I'm really interested in who they're going to throw out Cameron Krautwig. So they have, I'm looking at their roster. They do have someone, Darnell Brody, who's 6'10". Listed as a forward, but he's only averaging like 20 minutes a game or 19 minutes a game. And Cam is on the court 30-plus minutes a game. So what? So they're going to have him out there for 30 minutes as well? Like, he's not used to that. You know, like that's a big difference, especially 2 games in a row. I think Cam is going to go off in game 2. I don't, you know, that's just my Bucks prediction for this weekend. That's my... if I had to put money on it, I bet Cam scores nearly 20 points in game 2, maybe a little more. Their team, I mean, if Roman Penn keeps this up, Roman Penn's going to be first team All Valley, like, no question. If Drake is this good, he's averaging 12.5 points and 6 assists right now. He's shooting 42% from 3. Like, Also, DJ Wilkins for them shooting 52% from three. I mean, that's, I mean, I know it's still kind of small sample size, but we're getting, this is like halfway through the season now, especially like abbreviated season that we're going to have. Those are, I mean, those are the guys, like those three are the guys we need to watch out for. They have a couple guys off the bench. I know like Garrett Sturts, who has, I think, hurt us in the past. Jonah Jackson, who I know played for them a good amount last year. But they're just, it's,
yeah, I think Roman Penn, you just can't deny that. For me, I think it's going to be an interesting, I do think the outlier is Darnell Brody. I know, Roman Penn's having a great season. So our Tank's having a great season. Who's your third person that you mentioned?
Was it DJ Wilkins?
DJ Wilkins, yeah. DJ Wilkins has been around and he's, but Darnell Brody, transfer from Seton Hall. I think this is really interesting because he's 6'10". But something that when I went to really look at it was that he's been playing more minutes in conference play. He was playing, he only had one game where he had 20 minutes or more, or sorry, two games where he had 20 minutes or more and 21. So barely high minutes. But since conference play, he's played 27, 26, and 24 minutes.
Okay.
So really interesting. Maybe they don't have the other Illinois or Southern Illinois game, or maybe he just didn't play the other Southern Illinois game. That's interesting for me to go look that up. But 6'10", he played the other, and he played 21 minutes, and he's starting. So a person who's seen a lot more minutes in conference play, and again, is, I think he's, a big body that can really do damage to Cam. But if we double-team Tank, you might see someone like this go off. His field goal percentage is roughly around 60%, so not bad. So I think for me it's going to be Darnell Brody. I think it's just someone who, almost like how Ahir got wide open in this last game. Someone who you really don't go into really game plan, hey, he's the guy we got to watch out for because there's so many other special weapons. But as I'm seeing this uptick in conference play minutes, I could easily see this being maybe a mismatch just for Cam because Cam knows he's got to maybe defend or just be present for Tank because he's so athletic and being so great for Drake. But we can't forget about Darnell Brody. So it's going to be interesting to play. I think Drake is going to be a really great challenge. And I'm excited. I think that's what a conference play is all about. You give all these guesses and you predict everyone who's going to be top of the conference. So to see Drake lose their top player to just a really tough way to see their season end and now go 13-0, it's just really something to see and exciting for just conference play in general.
Yeah, I just kind of looking back at their schedule this year, their one decent win, like in a normal season, would be against Kansas State. But Kansas State is 5-6. They lost a game to a Division II school. They're real rough. And then other than that, I mean, they have a couple. They've actually played South Dakota three times. That's really – oh, no, twice. Sorry, twice. One was postponed. They played them twice. They had Air Force, which is fine. Like, you know, it's a mid-major school. It's not great, but – it's okay. They've also played Chicago State. They played North Dakota. And then the games against Indiana State and Southern Illinois. But they haven't played a close game yet. Like, I don't know if that makes me feel better or worse.
That's what I was about to ask, actually. So is it – because, like, even if you look at the last two SIU games, blowing out their opponent by 30 and then 20-plus. Indiana State, they nearly won by 20. The second game, they only won by 7. So – how do you value that? Just curious, what do you think about?
I definitely think there's something to be said about learning how to win close games in any sport. Like there is something different if it's tie game going into the, you know, last whatever minutes or fourth quarter or whatever you want to call it. There is something to be said about learning how to win close games. I think we have had the benefit of playing in a few close games in Richmond and now North Texas, which was pretty competitive until the last few, like, couple minutes, really the last minute. So I do think that, I don't know, it's hard. They're very, very good. I don't anticipate either of these games being more than a 10-point game, either way. Like, I just don't think it's going to happen unless something crazy happens. Someone goes and scores 30 points or someone gets hurt. You know, I hope that doesn't happen. But I just think these games are going to be close, and I do think that we've had the benefit of, like, knowing our lineups when it's close at the end, knowing all of our players' roles, be it, like, defending or scoring or feeding Cam in the post, whatever it may be. So it's hard to say. My final stance is going to be that I think that it's very important to learn how to win close games. And I think if one of these games comes down to it, I think we might benefit a little bit from that. Just having close games. But it's going to be fun. I hope they're both really fun. I honestly hope both games are just like down to the wire. One team wins by 1 point. I hope we win both games by a point, obviously, or even more. But I do think this team is good. And I think this is going to be it's going to be Drake's first test, which luckily we were able to get our first test against Wisconsin, 3 weeks ago or whatever it was, and then Richmond again. And so we've just been tested so far, and let's see. I think we got to get out to a quick start, being that it's going to be at Drake. We'll have the benefit of having a little bit more time off. Guys, maybe getting time to heal up and rest up, and got to start fast and finish strong in our two games against Drake this weekend.
No, yeah, I think Drake, like you said, is just going to really be a test of close games and what lineups come in toward the end of the game, because we've been kind of feeling comfortable. Are we going to start off hot? Are we going to rest guys and then really push toward the end? So a team like Drake, who's playing 9-10 guys a whole game, is just really going to see how we use that depth and who we use in the critical moments. So we'll see, and I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. It should be a lot of fun. Any other thoughts about Drake or like any other Valley team so far this season?
I thought SIU wouldn't have gone down this path. Evansville, again, is just the shocker of us all. You and I think you just realize how much they miss AJ Green. So tough to see. But Drake just automatically, I think, is the shocker to me. I just didn't expect this off to a complete hot start with losing Liam Robbins. So excited. As always, we're in Valley play, and that's what we got going on this week.
Yeah, let's see. Hopefully we can slow them down. Other than that, it's going to be interesting to watch how they figure out the schedule. I'm actually really, really surprised that they didn't try to get Loyola and Illinois State to play conference games this weekend, like switch up the schedule so that, maybe we play Northern Iowa or, what have you, because we have already played Illinois State, so we can't play them again. But I'm genuinely surprised that they didn't do that. I think that when teams are healthy, you really got to take advantage of that and get games in when you can. Maybe that's something that changes going down the road, like later in the schedule. Like they might have to do that. But there are some opportunities. There are some weekends open when we play our one home-and-home game against Valpo. That game's on a Thursday. So it is possible to potentially get in games like Sunday and Monday, or even just one of them.
With Valpo being so close, that's a great idea. Great, at least you're not missing so much on travel time, I guess.
I'm interested to see if that's why they did it. If the Valley wanted to leave those like weekends open so that they could reschedule. I think there is one weekend at the end of the year too, because we usually play our tournament really early. Like it's one of the first weekend tournaments, Arch Madness. So there is an extra week kind of just built into the schedule. They're going to have to use it. What are you gonna say?
I don't think so. I think the 26th is the last weekend of February. Okay. But the thing is, we play so early. So my point would be, I think they could easily see it being pushed back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just because we play so early. And I know it's the whole MVC, just with everyone. It's going to come down to, do we have the arena rights and all this? But in reality, I think it's going to be more important that you get your conference games in than rushing to play the MVC championship tournament, because someone's going to be like, well, I don't want to play Thursday, or mm-hmm. I don't want to play when. So all this is going to kind of come into play, I really do think, is to make sure you get your conference games in. So yeah, I think playing the Valpo games is going to be interesting because we are so close, maybe. So we'll see. I definitely think they should have done something. I agree with you. Maybe try to get Loyola. I really do think they should have tried to get Loyola to play some conference games, at least switch it up, switch with two conference teams out. So, but we'll see how they do moving forward. It's nothing on the conference that teams have COVID. It's just the world we're living in right now. So hopefully things get better, and we'll see a lot more teams playing and less canceling.
Yeah, let's hope they get these games in for sure. Yeah, I think that's going to do it for us, for Buck and Lou here at Podcast 63. Thank you all for listening. And don't forget, always remember, go Blairs.